The content of the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic is for informational purposes only. The content is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified health provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition. Never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you have heard on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare show. If you think you may have a medical emergency, call your doctor or 911 immediately. Focus on Females does not recommend or endorse any specific tests, physicians, products, procedures, opinions, or other information that may be mentioned on the radio show. Reliance on any information provided by Focus on Females or others appearing on the show at the invitation of Focus on Females is solely at your own risk. Now, it's time for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Here, we create clarity out of confusion and guide you through today's healthcare maze. Each week, we'll focus on a different medical topic with a guest expert answering your questions. Future topics and guests can be seen at www.focusonfemales.com. Call in between 12:30 and 1 p.m. on Sundays and present your case to our experts. To get involved with today's clinic, call now in Hillsboro, 289-1860, and everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Be proactive with your health. We're here to focus on you. And now, our host, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
The Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic is on. Today, we are tackling asthma in and out of pregnancy with guest expert Dr. Dennis Ledford. But first, this radio show and the free annual Focus on Females Women's Healthcare Symposium, now the largest in the country with 1,800 women, are supported by the not-for-profit Focus on Females Education Foundation, whose mission is to create an interactive, dynamic, community-based health safety net, making you an expert on your personal medical needs. The result? Better partnering with your existing doctor, leading to more effective office visits, faster results, and a reduced economic burden of avoidable medical and emergency care. We save lives and protect families. Today, asthma in and out of pregnancy. That is asthma whether you're pregnant or not. Pregnancy brings up other issues in addition to asthma that you may have. And so we encourage each of you to call in if you have asthma and pregnant, or asthma and not pregnant. Or if you know a loved one or a friend who are having difficulty with asthma issues, call now. That's 289-1860. If you're in Hillsborough County, outside of Hillsborough County, that's 877-969-8600. Call now with any question at all pertaining to asthma. My special guest today is Dr. Dennis Ledford. Dennis is originally from Johnson City, Tennessee. He received his undergraduate education at the Georgia Institute of Technology in Atlanta, and graduated from the University of Tennessee Center for Health Sciences with his MD degree. He was chief resident of internal medicine at the University of Tennessee and completed fellowships in rheumatology and immunology at New York University and allergy and immunology at the University of South Florida. Currently, he is a professor of medicine and pediatrics at the University of South Florida, chief of the allergy immunology section at the University Community Hospital, and on staff at Moffitt Cancer Center, Tampa General Hospital, and the James A. Haley VA Hospital and University Community Hospitals. And Dennis, once again, it's great to have you here.
Good afternoon, Steve. Thank you for having me.
And we, I guess we worked together, a few months ago when the topic was allergies.
That's right.
And we had a wonderful reception and had some excellent questions called in and received great feedback from that show.
I think it speaks to the prevalence of the problem when 20% of the population, maybe as high as 30%, are allergic, and 7% of young women have asthma. It's going to be a problem that often occurs with pregnancy, that allergy and asthma coexist with the pregnancy.
Well, that's right. And, although I'm an ophthalmologist and I focus on dry eye, because I do what I do here, I keep my eyes open to articles that are not related to ophthalmology, but may come up, and it's important for us to educate the public. And I'm looking at an article in the New England Journal of Medicine from April of this year entitled Asthma and Pregnancy. And interestingly, as I was reading this, which probably was one of the reasons why I gave you a holler and suggested we do a show on this, asthma is the most common, potentially serious medical problem that occurs during pregnancy. As you pointed out, approximately 8% of pregnant women report current asthma in recent national surveys. So it is it's obviously a very serious problem that needs to be addressed properly. And, of course, the risks, briefly going on, the risks of women with asthma in pregnancy include preeclampsia, preterm birth, infants with low birth weight or intrauterine growth restriction, infants with congenital malformations, and even perinatal death than those women who are pregnant without a history of asthma.
And so, I think the impact goes even beyond the pregnancy in that the whole family is affected. So often the siblings or the children that the young woman's caring for who's having the baby also could be affected, and other members of the family as well as the parents themselves. So it affects the entire family unit, not just the pregnancy itself.
Great point. I can speak to that myself with four kids, and certainly we went through some of those things that you're referring to. Excellent point. Okay, so let's begin with our show on asthma with this first question. Let's begin with the basics. For those of you that are listening that may not have asthma, what is asthma, Dennis?
Asthma is a condition that affects the airways, the tubes that conduct air from your throat into the lung itself. And the condition results in an inflammation of these tubes or these air tubes. We call them bronchial tubes or bronchial airway. Inflammation then causes increased mucus production with a tendency for the muscles of the tube to contract. And that contraction causes a constriction or narrowing called and it results in wheezing. So it's inflammation that results in obstruction or airflow limitation, which means you can't get air in and out as well with wheezing. And typically you get cough with a shortness of breath with this condition.
And is, excuse me, my question was, what if you're pregnant and what are the other potentials that a woman has difficulty breathing or some respiratory symptoms without asthma? What are the other things that you think about that could be the cause, so-called dyspnea of pregnancy?
That's right. There's, of course, pregnancy itself is a huge change in your body. So there's a lot of things that are happening, and it causes symptoms that are new because you've never experienced this, or even if you have, each pregnancy is different. The uterus itself presses up into the abdomen as the baby grows, and that usually causes some discomfort, but usually doesn't make you short of breath of interest. But there is a increased ventilation or breathing that occurs in pregnancy, probably due to some of the hormones, and that that tendency to breathe faster causes a feeling of shortness of breath. It's called the dyspnea of pregnancy, and that's actually a normal condition, but it can mimic or simulate the symptoms of asthma, leaving the woman to be confused as to whether this is my asthma or is this a normal shortness of breath of asthma. When we use the word dyspnea, that means shortness of breath, a feeling of shortness of breath. So that's really normal, but does resemble asthma very much.
So some of the findings that you may elicit on examination that can help differentiate would be a wheeze, correct?
Yes. The presence of a wheeze would not be typical and not be expected with the dyspnea of pregnancy, but the individual may not notice that wheeze as much, so that's much more difficult for her or her family to recognize. The wheeze would be a high-pitched whistling sound that you would typically hear when you exhale, normally at the end of exhalation. So as you get the air out, there'll be this high-pitched sound that you'll hear. But typically women who have asthma during pregnancy had asthma before their pregnancy. So it's not like this is a total surprise. It's unusual for it to show up out of the clear blue. So I think another clue that this isn't dyspnea of pregnancy would be the fact that she knew she had asthma before. And so some of the symptoms she may have been used to feeling prior to the pregnancy, so that would help her decide whether it is or isn't asthma.
And some of the other potential diagnoses would be bronchitis, for example.
Yes. If you remember, we said asthma is inflammation of the air tubes, and when we use the word itis on anything, it means inflamed. So if a joint's inflamed, we call it arthritis, for arth being joint. If the nose is inflamed, we call it rhinitis. And when asthma occurs, you have bronchitis because the bronchial tubes are inflamed. But most of the time when we use the word bronchitis, we're talking about infection. So a viral illness that causes inflammation or cigarette smoking that causes inflammation would tend to cause similar symptoms that might be similar to those that asthma would cause.
Now, what would you recommend for patients who were asthmatic before getting pregnant, now are pregnant, and they've not been previously tested for allergies? Should they undergo evaluation, say, with blood testing, for example, allergies to dust mites, cockroaches, spores, and so forth?
Well, we typically would prefer that the evaluation have been completed and that the woman is well-informed going into the pregnancy as opposed to trying to rush around and do something right at the time of the pregnancy. Reality would be there's probably not a whole lot you could do in that short time frame of 9 months. I know when you're pregnant, it probably seems like a lot longer than 9 months, but 9 months is a fairly limited time to make environmental change or to do much to change asthma. So as far as testing during a pregnancy, it's usually not that big of an issue. Sometimes if someone asks a specific question, could I be allergic to this, and I'm pregnant and I would like to avoid it if I am, we might test a one thing, but I would normally not do a battery of testing at that time. But I think it is important to know what your triggers are. When we use the word triggers, these are the events in your life that aggravate your asthma. An allergy that we've been talking about is one, but only one of several triggers. So I think, again, understanding this going into your pregnancy prepares you to be able to deal with these things as they occur.
And it is true that skin tests are not recommended during pregnancy if you are interested in evaluating a particular allergen because of potential systemic reactions?
Right. We try to do as little as we can to a woman when she's pregnant because of not wanting to add any injury on top of the pregnancy. And because skin testing rarely, very rarely, will cause a systemic reaction, we are putting the antigen on the skin. We typically would use a blood test, which doesn't rely on the skin response. It's not quite as accurate as a skin response, but it's certainly good enough if a specific question has arisen.
All right. And now let's see. How would you, as far as the evaluation of a patient, say a patient comes to you with a history of asthma, maybe they're an existing patient with that you're managing their asthma, and they get pregnant. How would you evaluate that patient?
I think I would still use the same techniques and strategies we used prior to the pregnancy. I would be a little bit more cautious in that I would like to monitor lung function more closely during the pregnancy. Again, pregnancy causes a lot of changes. We've already alluded to the symptoms that are felt, so sometimes it can be a little bit more confusing as to the asthma activity. So monitoring lung function, which is how much air you're able to move in and out of your lungs, is more important during the pregnancy. So typically we would go over their medicine plan, talk about the various side effects of medicine or potential side effects, come up with a strategy that she's comfortable with in managing the asthma, and then measure lung function and verify that it is within an acceptable range, and then monitor with follow-up visits during the pregnancy lung function to be certain that the asthma doesn't get worse or affect the pregnancy by getting worse, and help them answer additional questions about their medicines.
Okay, one more question before we go to a quick break. A general question. How would you respond to the question, does pregnancy affect asthma, generally speaking?
The answer is yes and no. good political answer. I think it's a bit mixed. In some pregnancies, there seems to be very little, if any, change of their asthma during the pregnancy. In a group, probably 20 to 30%, it actually seems to get worse. The asthma worsens during the pregnancy, and in a few, it actually seems to improve. So it's very difficult to answer the question, but I think the point is to be on guard that it can get worse, and it is a significant threat to the pregnancy, as you alluded to. A lot of potential problems that can occur if asthma is active during pregnancy.
So management must be individualized for every patient.
Absolutely.
We'll be right back with more on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. We're tackling asthma.
The Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Call now in Hillsboro, 813-289-1860. Anywhere else, 877-969-8600. More in a few moments.
Are you a man who has had any one of the following prostate problems? Rising PSA, urinary symptoms? or a negative needle biopsy? Hi, it's Mike Gallagher, and yes, prostate disease is a tough thing to talk about, but you know, I'm glad to be able to get the word out if it means saving men who hear the message from having unnecessary surgery or dangerous needle biopsies. At the Diagnostic Center for Disease in Sarasota, unlike a lot of doctors, they don't push surgeries, and they try to avoid biopsies. Dr. Ronald Wheeler has developed new groundbreaking MRIS technology that removes the guesswork from prostate cancer diagnosis. When men come in, their exact disease status can be accurately assessed. The good news is you do have less invasive choices that won't destroy your quality of life, but you need to get the facts. Call the Diagnostic Center for Disease for a free phone consultation. 941-957-0007. Write it down. 941-957-0007. That's 941-957-0007. Well worth the call.
This radio healthcare program is brought to you by the Focus on Females Education Foundation, a not-for-profit organization. Our mission is to make you an expert on your individual medical problems through dynamic and interactive educational programs. Real physicians answering real questions, speaking plain English, and giving practical, ready-to-use information on a wide variety of topics. Participation empowers families to better partner with their doctors. The result is more effective office visits, preventing unnecessary suffering, and eliminating the economic burdens of avoidable health and emergency care. We need your financial support. Donations to the foundation are tax deductible. Each and every dollar provides support so families can take control of their health. We have already saved and transformed lives for generations to come. Be a donor in what has been described as a phenomenon to reduce health illiteracy in our community. No donation is too small. To learn more about us and our free 5th Annual Women's Healthcare Symposium, March 27, 2010, visit www.focusonfemales.com. Donations can be made to Focus on Females Education Foundation, P.O. Box 320702, Tampa, Florida 33679-2702. Thank you.
Do your eyes have a foreign body sensation or are scratchy and sandy? Do they burn, sting, or itch, or are heavy and tired? Maybe your eyes are sensitive to light or your eyelids achy and sore. Have you seen countless doctors and still can't find relief? Have they told you, sorry, but you'll have to live with this and nothing can be done for you? Well, first, it's likely you suffer from dry eye. And second, don't stand for those answers anymore just because someone else doesn't understand your dry eye problems. Go to the only eye doctor in Central Florida that specializes exclusively in dry eye and related diseases. Meet with Dr. Stephen Maskin at the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, where you will be given up to 2 hours of face-to-face time with the doctor to get at the root cause of your dry eye pain, fluctuating vision, and redness, plus begin targeted therapy right away. Haven't you waited long enough?
Studio lines are open, so get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsboro, 289-1860, and everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
And welcome back to Focus on Females. We are talking about asthma today. Asthma in women that are pregnant, and asthma for men and women who are not pregnant. On the line is Devaney. Devaney, welcome to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. I'm here today with Dr. Dennis Ledford.
Thank you.
Hi. Now, you're a patient of Dr. Ledford's?
Yes.
Tell us about your case. How old are you?
I'm 27.
Okay. And you have asthma?
Yes, I do. And I'm wondering, since I have asthma, what are the chances that my baby will also have asthma? And is there anything I can do to reduce those chances?
All right. How old is your baby?
She is 6 months.
6 months old.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Dennis is, what's the youngest age a human can show signs of asthma?
Well, that's a great question, Steve. I don't know that we know the youngest age, partly because we rely on tests of lung function to diagnose asthma. We talked earlier about the symptoms overlap with other conditions, including common colds, for example, or we talked about dyspnea pregnancy. Mm-hmm. So there's many things that make you feel symptoms like asthma, but we need lung function to prove it, and you can't measure lung function in very young children. They're not able to cooperate. So we really don't know, but it probably starts right at birth.
So you can't hear, for example, you can hear a wheeze in an infant.
No question you can hear wheezing in infants, but many times that's infectious. Bronchiolitis is an infectious event in children, and that will make them wheeze even if they don't have asthma. So everything that wheezes isn't asthma. And everything that, and all asthma doesn't wheeze. So, you know, that adage of physical diagnosis.
And yet, it's important to make that the differential diagnosis between bronchiolitis, was, as you point out, an infection with a treatment. Well, I was going to say the treatment is not steroid, but maybe it is steroid in addition to antimicrobial therapy, as opposed to asthma, which obviously the therapy would be some steroid component.
No, it is a great point, because steroids have been used for bronchiolitis, but the latest studies show that they're probably not useful, and they shouldn't be utilized because it is an infectious event. And although it mimics asthma, it isn't asthma. Whereas if it is asthma, steroids are very much indicated and would potentially be life-saving.
And did you say the bronchiolitis is an infectious disease, but it's a viral?
Yes.
It is a viral, okay.
Bronchiolitis is a viral illness that it really affects young children because their airways are very small, and that little bit of inflammation from the infection causes the airways to be narrow enough that they actually will make a noise, a wheeze, when they breathe, like we talked about earlier.
So then the therapy for bronchiolitis, as you pointed out, is at this time, not giving steroid, but anything other than supportive therapy for the infant.
I mean, it's controversial. There are certainly many doctors who still advocate using steroids because inflammation is reduced by steroids. But the studies are not very conclusive that it's beneficial. So you're potentially giving the child a drug that isn't going to really make that much difference. So generally the treatment is supportive, monitoring them, making sure they've got enough oxygen in their airway so that they can keep their tissues oxygenated, and taking care of the child, waiting for the virus to go away, and then the problem will get better.
And the infants with this question of whether it's bronchiolitis or asthma, these are infants that would be cared for in the hospital, I take it, during this episode?
It varies with severity, but it, certainly in the more severe case, yes. Otherwise, the parents can watch the child. We often use mist machines or nebulizers to give medication to try to reduce the cough and try to make them more comfortable. But the treatment is basically time and support and waiting for it to get better.
Now, if it's bronchiolitis, how quickly would that respond to supportive therapy?
As a rule, it takes days up to weeks. The cough often will linger for several weeks afterwards, but the severe illness is in days, with the most severe shortness of breath and severe cough, and they'll even cough so hard they'll turn blue sometimes because their two airways so small, and they're coughing, and it gets plugged up, and so it's very frightening for the parents to experience this.
Okay, so let's say a child or an infant does not show signs of asthma, maybe even as late as 6 months. Does that enable you to say anything about the potential for this child to develop, or infant to develop, asthma later in life?
Well, Devaney's question was about her child, and she said she was now 6 months and wanting to know whether there was something she could do to reduce the likelihood of her having asthma. And asthma develops during childhood, where it becomes more obvious that the child has the condition. Typically, the first clue will be that they'll have trouble with viral infections or colds. Instead of being a head cold, it turns into a chest cold, or their chesty children is an old-fashioned term, where colds always settle into the chest. And that would be another indication that you potentially have a child who has asthma. Now, some of these children, though, outgrow this, and I don't think you should panic when your child seems to be prone to chest infections. There's a group of children who seem to be born with small airways. They're just like everything else in children, every individual is an individual. And some have small airways, and as they grow, these airways get bigger, and the problem just seems to disappear. And that's what's often referred to as they're outgrowing their asthma. They probably never had asthma to begin with. They had something that mimicked asthma. But as far as her recognizing, and her daughter, who's 6 months now, does she have asthma or not, you really can't say for sure. The presence of food allergy would be an indicator that the child is more likely to have asthma. And the number of people with asthma in the family would be another indicator. So in Devaney's family, if she had the condition and maybe she had a sibling who was affected, or one of her parents, or even more probably importantly, if the father's side of the family had a member who had asthma, the chances of her daughter having asthma goes up. There's nothing she can do about that, of course. That's the genetic roll of the dice, so she can't change that. Her question was, can she do anything to reduce the likelihood of her child having asthma? And so far, we just talked about indicators, but not anything that she could do.
Devaney?
I also have one other question, if you don't mind.
Okay, Debbie, can you hang on a second? We'll be right back.
Sure.
We'll take a quick break. Be right back with more on asthma in and out of pregnancy on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic.
With SRN News, I'm Michael Harrington in Washington. Bombings in southern Afghanistan have killed four U.S. Marines. It's the area where thousands of U.S. troops are taking part in a massive anti-Taliban operation. Violence has been flaring all over the country. Democratic Senators Dianne Feinstein and Dick Durbin say the Bush administration may have broken the law if it ordered the CIA to cover up a counterterrorism program. That's after the New York Times reported the CIA withheld information on direct orders from former Vice President Dick Cheney. A Justice Department official says Attorney General Eric Holder might pursue a criminal probe into Bush administration interrogation practices. President Obama has said in the past he doesn't want to go there. President Obama says slavery is a terrible part of the U.S. history and should be taught in a meaningful way. That in an interview with CNN. He arrived back home from Ghana, where he made similar statements earlier this morning, a little after midnight. This is SRN News.
I want to say that I love all your talk show people, and I'm glad you're here. Thank you.
I like your station. I'm listening to it a lot more.
Bill Bennett, this is the best talk show in the morning. This is good, man. Thank you all.
Really, really like the people you have on, especially Hugh Hewitt. It's a great station. Thank you.
Talk Radio 860 WGUL.
Digital goddess Kim Komando here. Do you use a web mail account? Well, email criminals are now targeting you. They're breaking into your email accounts and sending spam to all your contacts. I'm going to tell you more about it and how you can protect yourself on this weekend's show. After all, how else are you going to stay ahead in this tech race? That's why you need me, Kim Komando. It's all happening right here this weekend.
Kim Komando, Sunday afternoon at 2 on Talk Radio 860 WGUL.
Your host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic is ophthalmologist and eye surgeon Dr. Stephen L. Maskin. Dr. Maskin is the medical director of the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, the proud sponsor of today's show. At the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, Dr. Maskin specializes in solving difficult dry eye and cornea disorders with patients traveling from over 35 states and 5 continents for his evaluation. Dr. Maskin manages these dry eye disorders using innovative medical and surgical therapies, including the use of placenta-derived amniotic membrane, a new patent-pending natural eye lubricant to provide relief for dry eye sufferers, an exciting new procedure to unblock obstructed tear glands, and a topical cure for eye surface cancer. Dr. Maskin has been successfully managing difficult dry eye cases for over 20 years and is board-certified, fellowship-trained, and a fellow of the American College of Surgeons and American Academy of Ophthalmology. He's been selected a best doctor in America every year from 2000 through 2009 and as an America's top ophthalmologist by Consumers Research Council of America. We hope the Focus on Females education programs, including this show, will help you and your family find the health care that works for you. Focus on Females believes in saving lives and protecting families. And please, visit drmaskin.com, and if you have not found relief for your painful red dry eyes, come in to see Dr. Maskin at the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, where comfortable eyes lead to restored lives.
Studio lines are open, so get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsboro, 289-1860, and everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
And welcome back to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. We are addressing asthma in and out of pregnancy, and on the line is Devaney. Are you still with us, Devaney?
Yes, I am.
Great. Well, you asked a great question. Is there anything that a mom and dad can do to reduce the risk of asthma in their newborn, and so that to help them as they get older? And Dr. Dennis Ledford, our guest expert today, was addressing a few different items. On the break, we talked a little bit about smoking. And, Dennis, why don't you take over from there?
Okay. Debbie's question was, what can I do to prevent asthma in my child? And we were talking about some of the difficulties in recognizing it. In fact, some children do outgrow it and so forth. But what can she do? And I think there's a two or three things she probably would be beneficial. And one absolutely would be not smoking. There is clear evidence that if a parent smokes, particularly the mother, probably because of her contact with the child, but if the parents smoke, the child's risk goes up. And that's even true if you, quote, smoke outside. I have many parents who tell me that they only smoke outside, as if we should be driving down the street looking from side to side to see the people standing outside smoking because no one smokes inside. But the reality is we do smoke a little bit inside even if we try to go outside, and it's still on you. It's a part of you. And that smoking has chemicals that get into the breast milk, and it's something you just don't want to expose your child to.
And on that note, Dennis, how would you advise the parents that are around others secondhand smoke, or they receive secondhand smoke?
I would discourage that as well, because there is a baby is susceptible to multiple things that we don't understand, and secondhand smoke is real. And so we just don't know what the dose would be, but who wants to be doing an experiment with your child? So I would ask relatives and others that you visit not to smoke, and probably choose not to go visit family who smoke a lot, ask them to come over and visit you to try to minimize that. So the first thing that Devaney and her husband or the baby's father could do would be not to smoke. And the second would probably be breastfeeding. It is a bit controversial as to whether you actually prevent asthma by breastfeeding, but clearly there is some protective effect immunologically in breastfeeding, and I think that would be a thing that she could do to try to minimize the chance of her baby being affected. And the third and fourth are a bit controversial. They're about exposure. Should I expose my child to animals early in life or not? Is it better or worse to be around animals? And probably if you have animals in your home when you bring your baby home or in the very first year of life, if you have more than one animal, it seems like that is protective. Now, once the child is allergic to the animal, it isn't beneficial. So you're taking a chance, because if you have a pet and your baby becomes allergic to the pet, you're actually going to make the child worse. But in the pre-asthma phase, before the baby has become allergic, there may be benefit in having pets. And lastly, exposure to other children. There is some evidence that having older brothers and sisters makes you less likely to have asthma, suggesting that exposure to other children minimizes your chance of having allergy and asthma. And this gets to this idea of called the hygiene hypothesis. And so Devaney doesn't have other children, but she could choose to put her baby in the context of other children by going to daycare or a group activity with other children, because that exposure to other children might introduce certain viruses, which, although they make the child sick at the time, in the long run reduces the chance of them having asthma.
How's that sound, Devaney?
Well, that's very helpful. Interesting. I did not know that. I have one question related to something you talked about earlier, if you don't mind, if we have time.
Certainly.
You mentioned bronchiolitis and asthma and the difference between the two. How would you be able to tell if it was one or the other?
Well, Debbie, that's a great question, again, because of the issues that we were discussing earlier, that the symptoms overlap so much. You really can't tell for sure. And that's one of the reasons that physicians will treat with steroids, because they're not absolutely certain. So they'd rather err on the side of assuming that maybe there is a little bit of asthma there, and steroids work very well for asthma, but they don't work very well for bronchiolitis. So that's where this discussion comes up. And so I think in to respond to you, sometimes you do not know. You do not know. Mm-hmm. So if the child has eczema or food allergy, if the child's parents have asthma, you would tend to think, well, this is very well could be asthma. Whereas if there is no history for that, and the child was perfectly fine, developed a viral illness, started coughing, and developed this sort of raspy, wheezy cough or shortness of breath with the cough, that you might tend to cause bronchiolitis. So many times we don't know, and I know that's frustrating for you, the parent, when we don't know.
Therapeutically, Dennis, if say a 6-month-old who has some potentially bronchiolitis or asthma is given steroid, if it was asthma, would it respond more rapidly, more completely than if it were bronchiolitis, or you just really can't make that statement?
I think yes. The answer is that asthma is steroid responsive, and bronchiolitis, if it is responsive, is much less responsive. And so the debate really is, why not go ahead and err on the side of giving the drug? But every drug has a side effect, and many pregnant women are very worried, and young parents too. Do I want this drug given to my body, to my baby? And is there a risk? And every drug has a risk, as we know. So we like to not use things unless they're clearly indicated.
And again, that goes back to the fact that medicine sometimes is an art as well as a science, and you have to constantly individualize your therapy and management, and at the same time, constantly reevaluate your therapy and management as you go through.
And that's so true in asthma because it's inherently variable. And although people think they know when they have it and think they know when they don't have it, in reality, many times they're wrong. And I think frequent office visits, frequent meaning several months during your pregnancy, are useful in helping establish a bond between you and your physician so that you feel comfortable in the recommendations. It helps the physician to get a better sense for how you're doing and gives us an opportunity to measure lung function because, again, without that measurement, it's really difficult to be absolutely sure. The measurement we use in the clinic is something called spirometry. It's a device that measures lung function. But you can get a device called a peak flow meter that is fairly inexpensive. Some health insurance plans cover it, some don't. But, again, it would cost $30 to $50. And it's something you can use at home to measure your lung function throughout your pregnancy to be certain that you're on target, that you're where you need to be.
And a great point Dennis made that to have follow-ups through the pregnancy, because after all, you may think you have exacerbation of asthma, but as Dennis pointed out, it may be something different. Maybe it's worsening gastroesophageal reflux or sinusitis or rhinitis, which can make it more challenging and could require additional types of therapeutic approaches to reduce your symptoms.
Absolutely, because we don't want to be treating the wrong problem. And again, many of these symptoms overlap. And not only do they overlap, but the conditions make the asthma worse. So not only do the symptoms of reflux mimic the symptoms of asthma, or the symptoms of sinusitis with cough mimic the symptoms of asthma, the conditions seem to aggravate asthma. So it's really a very complicated situation. And then you've got the complication of the pregnancy and all the changes that are going on with that that are all new, or at least are different with each pregnancy for the woman and her family. So it's a very challenging situation.
Devaney, any additional questions?
No, thank you very much for your help. I really appreciate it.
Well, thanks for joining us on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic today.
Thanks.
All right, thank you. All right. Okay, let's go a little further into looking at some of the medications that patients with asthma and pregnancy may be receiving. Essentially, they're the same class of medications as one who is not pregnant with asthma would use, correct?
Yes, I think basically we continue the medicines you are using prior to your pregnancy, with some exceptions. There's this classification that the FDA has of medications that sort of give some ranking of safety in pregnancy. It's certainly not an absolute science, but it is the best that we have. And so we try to switch as much as possible to the safest class of medications if there is an option. Sometimes there isn't. But fundamentally, if you're doing well with your treatment going into your pregnancy, that bodes well for the pregnancy, and it would be best to keep on the medication during the pregnancy. If you can't breathe, your baby can't breathe. And so stopping your medicines isn't a good idea.
Right. And so on the line is Angela from Tampa. Angela, welcome to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic.
Hi. I just wanted to make a few comments. I did not get to hear the whole show, but I did hear a portion of it, and I just wanted to comment. I'm actually one who has allergies, reflux, and sinusitis, and asthma. So I've had everything during my three pregnancies of four children. I had twins. And I will tell you firsthand that if it weren't for the treatment during my pregnancies with the pulmonary doctor, I would have had a very difficult time, not having the medications available, even in the first trimester. I want to say that it was a very big help throughout my pregnancy to be able to have these medications, inhalers, and everything available.
Did you have to increase your treatment during your pregnancy, decrease it, or just maintain what you were using compared to before the pregnancy?
I had to increase it at certain times. The first pregnancy, towards the end of the pregnancy, I got a virus that turned into pneumonia. And then the second pregnancy, I had bronchitis. And then the third pregnancy with twins, I was hospitalized with preterm labor at 27 weeks, and I was in the hospital for 2 months and had a hard time at that point because I caught something when I got in the hospital and had to have a lot of treatment then, where my pulmonary doctor came in and treated me. And I say it's extremely helpful. A lot of women worry about taking any medication during pregnancy, and it's just that the benefits definitely outweigh the risks.
Dennis, like to make a comment?
Well, I think that's well, I'm glad you have had this experience and that you have this comfort level, because I think many women and families struggle with that question because of their concern of not using medicine when they're pregnant, for that fear of this unknown, could I have a negative effect? And there is some evidence of some side effects, rarely in rodents or some drugs, and you look at that and you're saying, well, how do I use
process
that information?
That, yeah.
How do I extrapolate that to me? And I think your point was right on target, that if you don't get good care during the pregnancy, the baby isn't getting good care. And you're not doing your baby any favors by suffering with a chronic condition that could affect your ability to get oxygen to the baby, to sleep and to rest and to basically support this life that's inside you. You can't do a fair job if you can't take care of yourself. And I think that your comfort with the medicines is reassuring, because many people don't feel that comfortable, and they want to stop everything and see if they can't do it on their own. And I think they sort of view it like anesthesia with labor, which, you know, they'll say, I'd rather do it natural. I want to deliver. I want to have my baby naturally. Mm-hmm. I don't want to take medicines. And that is just not the best interest to you or your baby. So I appreciate your point, Angela.
And even the first trimester, I was on prednisone also.
Is that oral or inhale? Or oral prednisone?
Oral prednisone.
Mm-hmm. Well, clearly your case sounds more severe. Most women can be managed very effectively with inhaled medication. But again, asthma is variable, and your case is not the one your neighbors. And I think that's another mistake sometimes, is that because asthma affects 6% of the population or 8%, you have a friend or a neighbor or a family member who has asthma too, and they'll say, oh, no, in my pregnancy we did this. And again, it gets back to that individualization, that Angela's asthma is not Devaney's asthma. And and you can't equate the two. It's really a decision that's made based upon the input of you and the decision at the bedside with your doctor that delivers the best care for you.
Right.
Very good. And I guess to summarize, as far as taking asthma medication, I quote from this article in New England Journal of Medicine, overall, the risks associated with asthma medications in current use are considered to be definitely lower than the risks associated with uncontrolled asthma.
And that's exactly true, but I think the struggle, again, to give the other side is that what happens when my asthma is better and I feel like I'm not having symptoms? I would rather now stop the medicine because I'm not symptomatic. And the difficulty there is that then you put yourself at risk of a really bad exacerbation, one requiring hospitalization like Angela had, and she was using her medicine and still ended up being hospitalized.
And for that reason, we have physicians. And in partnership with your physician, maybe one can step down in treatment. But by all means, do not just abort all your medications and stop your therapies, but consult your doctor.
Can I make one more comment?
Please.
After I had the last children, the twins, I did get allergy tested and had a lot of allergic reactions to many things. So now I get allergy shots, and it is one of the best things I've ever done, because now my asthma symptoms, even though I do still have problems, are so much less severe, dramatically.
Were you tested?
Dramatically.
Were you tested? Was it the first time you were tested?
It was the first time I was tested, yes.
All right.
Well, I think that's, again, a wonderful sound. I appreciate your sharing that, because I, as an allergist, certainly do see people with allergy and believe that immunotherapy can make a major difference, because immunotherapy is a way of changing your body, changing your immune system, so that you lose or reduce some of that sensitivity that you live with, so that then the triggers are not going to be quite so often, and you can get by with less medicine and have less symptoms. Mm-hmm. I'm glad it's worked out for you that way as well.
Thank you.
Thanks very much, Angela, for joining us on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Have all your friends call in with their questions.
I will.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Have a
Bye-bye.
Good day. All right. We'll be right back in a flash with more on asthma, in and out of pregnancy, on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic.
Unfortunately, today's average trip to the doctor plays out something like this. A couple of months just to get an appointment. A couple of hours in the waiting room. Only a couple minutes with a doctor. And another couple prescriptions. Elite Care MD is different. Dr. John Hemstreet, Medical Director.
Convenience is a big plus for Elite Care MD. There's no more two-hour wait in the doctor's office. There's no more waiting 2 months to get an appointment to see your doctor while you get sicker and sicker. The Elite Care MD approach is a more holistic approach. Not just, okay, here's a pill to fix it, but here's a program that is comprehensive. This is real wellness. At Elite Care MD, we can help you optimize your performance at work for your family so that you feel your best every day.
Your time and your health are worth Elite Care MD.
It's a revolution in medicine, one of the first of its kind. Everybody should know about it.
Call Elite Care MD, 813-286-4000. That's 813-286-4000. This radio healthcare program is brought to you by the Focus on Females Education Foundation, a not-for-profit organization. Our mission is to make you an expert on your individual medical problems through dynamic and interactive educational programs. Real physicians answering real questions, speaking plain English, and giving practical, ready-to-use information on a wide variety of topics. Participation empowers families to better partner with their doctors. The result is more effective office visits, preventing unnecessary suffering, and eliminating the economic burdens of avoidable health and emergency care. We need your financial support. Donations to the foundation are tax deductible. Each and every dollar provides support so families can take control of their health. We have already saved and transformed lives for generations to come. Be a donor in what has been described as a phenomenon to reduce health illiteracy in our community. No donation is too small. To learn more about us and our free 5th Annual Women's Healthcare Symposium, March 27, 2010, visit www.focusonfemales.com. Donations can be made to Focus on Females Education Foundation, P.O. Box 320702, Tampa, Florida 33679-2702. Thank you. Confused about dry eye? Not getting answers as to why your eyes are so red and painful and your blurry vision that gets a little better with a good blink? Now you can learn all about dry eye, the causes, treatments, and home remedies from the number one best-selling consumer book on dry eye problems, Reversing Dry Eye Syndrome by Dr. Stephen Maskin. Published by Yale University Press, Reversing Dry Eye Syndrome has been selected as a 2008 Best Book of the Year by the Association of American University Presses and a 2007 Best Consumer Health Book by Library Journal. Find answers for your dry eye. Go to your bookstore and pick up a copy of Reversing Dry Eye. You'll be glad you did.
Studio lines are open, so get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsboro, 289-1860, and everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
And welcome back to the Asthma Hour here, In and Out of Pregnancy. We're tackling asthma on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. I'm Steve Maskin. My guest expert this hour has been Dr. Dennis Ledford. Dennis, let's ask a few more questions here before the end of the hour. Is there any concern about breastfeeding if the woman is taking asthma medication?
I think the simple answer about breastfeeding while taking medications for allergy and asthma is no, there's no problem. There is a very tiny amount of medications that are given systemically, that is by mouth or by an injection or in the vein, that are going to get into the breast milk. But most of the medicines that we use for management of asthma are inhaled. And the amount of medicine you're delivering to your body is so small that it just doesn't impact the breast milk. So for the inhaled medicines, I don't think there's any reason to be concerned. When you start taking oral medicine, you need to at least consult with your pediatrician and your physician. But for the most part, they're all safe. And certainly if you were taking them during the pregnancy, when there's going to be more exposure through the blood flow through the placenta than there will be through the breast milk, you shouldn't be afraid. So I've had some patients who want to stop a medicine when they're breastfeeding, even though they took the same medicine while they're pregnant. So there's really no reason to be concerned.
And let's talk a little bit about at least two ways that someone who's taking an inhaled steroid can decrease systemic absorption. We talked before earlier today about the powdered dosaging or versus the metered dose. Would you speak to that?
Yes, the metered dose inhaler was the first inhaled medicine. It's the kind that comes in a canister that you press down on and it poofs.
What kind of examples of steroids come in that? in that preparation?
Well, there's multiple trade names, okay. But I think the most common medicine that people are familiar with is albuterol,
okay,
or a bronchodilator, which is not a steroid but a reliever medicine. This is something you use whenever your symptoms occur, and it will give you temporary relief. All the albuterol that's available on the market is delivered by this meter dose inhaler, this puffer, that you shake up and you press down and you puff. There are steroids that are inhaled that way. It's better, if you can, to use something called a spacing device or a chamber that reduces the amount deposits in the mouth so you don't swallow as much medicine, but you inhale more medicine, so it actually makes it work better. Those devices with the chamber, you put the device into the chamber, and then it gives a space between the mouthpiece and your mouth. Now, the newer devices and the ones probably more commonly used are called dry powder or self-actuated. These you wrap your mouth around and you inhale through it like a soda straw, where you pull the medicine out and it's a powder and there's no pressure in the device. Those you don't use a spacer. But the mouth deposition with the powder is not actually very high compared to the ones that poof. So it's not a big risk. And furthermore, the newest steroids are safer. Even if you swallow the drug, they're much safer. Hmm.
And in all circumstances, do you recommend the patient rinse their mouth out and rinse and spit out?
Great point, Steve. Yes, I think that would reduce the amount absorbed when you swallow the drug if you rinse out what's stuck to your tongue and your mouth, and then you don't have it to swallow. But even if you don't do that, as what I was alluding to, is the newer medicines, the liver inactivates it. So when you swallow it and it's absorbed, the liver inactivates it before it gets into the body. So fortunately, even if you forget to rinse, the risk is extremely low. And so therefore, it's safe to be using these medicines when you use proper doses.
Okay. And Dennis, would you like to say a summary comment for our listeners about asthma in and out of pregnancy as we finish the hour?
Yes, I do. I think it's important, one, not to fear asthma, that this is a common problem. 6-8% of young women are going to have asthma while they're pregnant, and we are able to help you get through the pregnancy just fine. And you shouldn't modify your plans for family based upon that. Nor should you be afraid of asthma affecting your child because you have asthma. That's true, it's a genetic condition. But just because you have a certain skin color or you're a certain height, you're not going to not have a child because you want to have that experience. Likewise, we can help the child get through their condition without too much difficulty. And you can't assume that your child will be the same as you, that if yours is bad, that doesn't mean your child's will be bad at all. So don't be afraid in that respect. And the third is that even though asthma can get worse during pregnancy, most of the time as you get close to delivery, it actually seems to improve a little bit. We heard from one of our callers who didn't have that experience, but she had an infection right before she delivered. It was one of the reasons hers got worse, I believe. Mm-hmm. And so I think if you don't get that infection, it seems that during labor in that most difficult time, that actually it seems to get some better. So we'll help you get there, and then you'll be able to do the rest.
Important thing is communicate with your physicians.
Absolutely.
Every step of the way.
And don't forget to get that lung function measurement, because you don't want to shortchange your baby, and don't assume you can make it on your own. Make sure you get evaluated.
Very good. I'd like to thank my guest expert, Dr. Dennis Ledford. And for all listeners out there, next week, July 19th, our topic will be Crohn's disease and ulcerative colitis. Guest expert, Dr. Jürgen Nord. And this is Dr. Steve Maskin once again wishing you a great week, and look forward to hearing your questions next week on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Have a great week.
Thank you, Steve.
The Focus on Females Healthcare Education programs are for you. Visit our free 5th annual Focus on Females Women's Healthcare Symposium, March 27th, 2010, at the Tampa Convention Center, and every Sunday from 1 to 2 p.m. for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic on Talk Radio 860 WGUL.